Hello, good evening, and welcome. South African Airways has been out of the news for quite some while. Not a bad thing, given that it always used to be in the headlines because of bailouts that it required from taxpayers. But today we've got some good news for the steadily recovering state-owned enterprise. South Africa's number three airline, the privately owned SEMAIR, has become SAA's wingman. Its founder and CEO, Miles van der Moerlen, explains how this unprecedented public-private partnership between his airline, SEMAIR, and South African Airways will work.
The codeshare is where our aircraft will carry multiple airlines' codes with its flight. So it'll be a SEMAIR flight number, it'll be a SAA flight number, and shortly, hopefully, we'll be doing a codeshare with Emirates, and it'll be an Emirates code on exactly the same aircraft. So one flight is operated in the eyes of the ticket holder by multiple airlines and carries multiple codes. But obviously, regulatory-wise, there's a single operator behind and a single aircraft behind. And that's what we've entered into with SAA.
So what does it really mean?
So simply put, you can go onto our website and you can book an SAA flight and vice versa. So our ticket stock is available through their distribution system and theirs through ours. We will have in due course some schedule alignment. You know, for example, the equipment they operate, the A320s are far more effective on a route like Joburg, Cape Town. And our route network to smaller centers, the A320 wouldn't be as effective on. So we can get operational efficiencies by operating where it makes sense and leaning on our partners where it makes sense too. So it's a 1+1=3 kind of a scenario.
So what does it mean your focus is going to be in future as SEMAIR? Where are you going to be positioning to grow your market share and your customer base?
So we're going to continue to grow the secondary destinations and the regional destinations. That's where our focus is going to be. Really where our focus is going to move off of is the trunk routes, where there's enormous passenger volumes and the larger aircraft have improved economies of scale over regional aircraft that we operate.
And there wasn't any intention ever of maybe buying one of those or some of those big aircraft. You've got, a couple of dozen planes now in the air?
Yeah, our total aircraft comes in the mid-30s now. We have been considering what they call narrow-body equipment, that class of aircraft. Unfortunately, worldwide, there's such a squeeze on capacity. I saw recently Airbus is 8,700 aircraft on back order. If you buy a new airplane, it delivers in the mid-30s, and Boeing also has a similar problem. So the supply chain issues and just great sales for them mean that there's such a squeeze on equipment. Simply, it's just not a time for anybody to get into a new type. You'll just be overpaying. So our approach is to wait for we're waiting for the market to cool a bit. But in the interim, this may replace that as a strategic decision moving forward.
There's a powerful interview today on BizNews where my colleague Linda van Tilburg spoke with Zimbabwean social activist and journalist Tendai Mbofana. He certainly doesn't hold back. You'll hear in this clip how he compares Zimbabwe's leaders to spoiled children who are squandering a colonial inheritance while the country crumbles.
You know, this is a truth that most of our people don't want to hear, that hate them or love them, the colonialists built this country from scratch, from waste, from a bush forest, whatever it was, to build the cities, the high-rise buildings, the houses. Yeah, where I am, this house was built in 1973. It's a legacy of colonialism, where I am right now. So if you build something, you love it, you're attached to it. You don't want to see any harm come to it. You want to see it prosper. Then we come in 1980. We don't build anything. We're just seeing this like a child, with a spoiled little child who's just inherited his parents' a wealth that he never worked a day for. The only thing that you think about is spending it and spending it and spending it until you have nothing. So that's why you find these people in power. They have all this wealth. They are living in obscene wealth. And yet our roads are potholes. We can't drive right now. All our roads, most of them, they cannot even be driven on. Otherwise, our cars will be damaged. We go for hours without electricity. Where I stay here, where I am right now, we have not had any running water in 5 years. So we end up, if you've got the resources, put together resources, you think you drill a bore. Right now, I use bore water. But how many people can afford to drill a bore in Zimbabwe? And this is a town. I'm not in a rural area. I'm in a in an urban area. We are supposed to have water. That's what an urban area is. That's why my mother left the rural areas and my father left the rural areas in the 60s and to come to town, because there was electricity, there was water, there were good houses, you know, there were good schools. But now that has been wiped away. We no longer have electricity every time. We, as I said, we have not had water in this town, in this suburb where I'm staying in for 5 years. We have basically gone back to rural areas. Our schools, my school where I went to, just nearby, I used to be proud of that school. It was wonderful. It's a former Group A school, which were previously for white people. I went there after independence. But right now you go there, you'll be shocked. You just feel like crying, and you just look at it and say, is this really the school that I went to? Everything is just destroyed, you know. Everything is dysfunctional. Nothing is maintained. There are no books, adequate books. It's shameful.
We had a taste of Elon Musk's latest blockbuster idea on the BizNews briefing last night. He's putting together two of his companies, SpaceX and XAI, into a business worth $1.25 trillion. That's just slightly less than his electric car business, Tesla. For comparison, if you put the Elon Inc. companies together, they're worth about six times South Africa's GDP and almost double the value of all the shares listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange put together. Well, our partners at Bloomberg say that's all very well, but does this not distract Elon from his stated objective of landing on Mars?
Right. So the original memo came from Elon himself, which I actually believe is posted on the SpaceX website now, talking about the reason for the merger. He mentioned creating the most ambitious vertically integrated company that would be designed around AI and using space for AI purposes. Obviously, you know, Elon's talked very openly in the recent months about building out these massive data centers in space in order to do complex computing for artificial intelligence. And so that was just reiterated in that memo. And then a follow-up email that talked about the new valuation for the company. We're looking at $1.25 trillion for SpaceX. That's because SpaceX was revalued at $1 trillion, with XAI at $250 billion. And then a new share price being set as well. So it was just a massive day for both SpaceX and XAI, and this new combined company that we will be covering moving forward.
Lorna, investors pumped about this because XAI spends gargantuan amounts of money, about $1 billion a month. Is that a good news story longer term as they try to IPO the business?
I think there's definitely some skepticism and a lot of questions that we still need answered, right? You know, XAI comes with a lot of debt. Where does that debt go? How is that going to get paid off? I think also there's some questions about what this means for the long-term vision for SpaceX. You know, ever since the company was founded, it was founded with the purpose of starting a settlement on Mars that humans could live and work at. It's, you know, this sounds, you know, building out data centers for AI sounds like a bit of a detour from that. I'm sure, you know, there are ways in which Elon will say that they all work together. But I think, you know, it maybe some investors and shareholders might think this isn't exactly what they signed up for when it came to the SpaceX vision overall.
Robertson, a small town in the middle of nowhere where a wine farmer claims to have sold a Volkswagen up to e-bike cars.
A farmer.
What car did you really sell them?
A VWR.
Right here in Robertson.
Small town, but we know about we buy cars.
Yeah, but what's a farmer doing with a VWR?
It's just a runaround.
Cool, cover story. And I see you traded it in for this, like a double cab Renault. Well, were they all out of Rangers?
We buy cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Finally, tonight, we close off with another insight from Cathy Wood, the chief executive of ARK Invest. She explains why there's no need to fear that artificial intelligence will kill jobs. Plus, there's promise of space. Yep, thanks, Elon. And blockchain.
We could not have imagined Uber or Airbnb back then. And I think the same is true now. We cannot imagine the kinds of jobs that are going to exist in the future. And the other thing that we're excited about from a job creation point of view is we're seeing new worlds being created. And by that I mean most of us think about Earth. But now we're moving into space. Even data centers, we think, Elon leading that charge, will start moving into space. And we won't have the not in my backyard and the bureaucracy associated with data centers. There's going to be huge job creation around the space exploration and all of the opportunities out there. And then the other one, and you'll find this in our digital assets section of Big Ideas, is the digital world, immutable private property rights. We know from economic history the best way to lift people and countries out of poverty is with private property rights that are immutable. Well, that is now moving into the digital world for the first time, thanks to blockchain technology. So we're not worried about job creation, but for those who are, because there is something happening that I know is concerning to many people, the unemployment rate for 16 to 24-year-olds has moved to 12%, big increase. And what is that saying? That's saying that entry-level jobs are not being created the way they used to be. To those people, I say, you know, you must have in your mind an idea for a new business, something that frustrates you, an unmet need. Well, now you can go to ChatGPT, you can go to Grok, and you can have an assistant help you build out that business. Just interview for jobs, but also think about new business ideas. I think we're going to see entrepreneurial explosion here.
Well, thanks for joining us. We'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, cheerio.